Week, I went online so I could hear as what Jerry taught. It always helps out when I'm trying to fill in right after something he's done, so to know exactly where I fit in with this study here. We're continuing the study of those heroes of faith that are mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11. Once again, as repetition is always one of the best teachers, what's the definition of faith? Absolutely. Substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things unseen. Trusting obedience, as I mentioned a few classes back. Faith, and it's important as we understand and we have the assurance that this is the holy and inspired Word of God that we have here that we can study in the Bible. We know that every word in here, God put it there for a purpose. So sometimes you say, well, it gets legalistic when you're trying to look at every word. But it's interesting, as I study the Bible more, I find out God's plan, God's idea, what He was trying to teach us. Something different than I thought the first time I read it. In Hebrews 11, verse 31. By faith, the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe when she had received the spies with peace. One verse about this person. We're going to spend the whole class on this person. Because we're going to look back in the Old Testament to understand why Rahab was different. Up to this point, who are the characters of faith that we've talked about? Noah, Abraham, Isaac, Enoch, Joseph, Moses, Abel, Sarah. I mean, those are all key characters. When you're growing up in Bible history and you know all these, then all of a sudden we're thrown in with Rahab. Not a major character from most people's perspective. If they don't study, if you don't read the one chapter in the book of Joshua, you really don't know who Rahab is. Well, you're going to learn about Rahab this morning. You're going to have a much better perspective of understanding here. Turn back to Joshua chapter 2. Let's try to understand why this person, this individual, this woman was held out by God in the New Testament. So the New Testament church would read about her and understand there's something about her that was different. Something about her that was worth emulating, being like her. Joshua chapter 2. Joshua the son of Nun sent out two men from Acacia Grove to spy secretly, saying, "Go view the land, especially Jericho." Is this the first time the Israelites have sent out spies? No, second time. How many spies were sent out the first time? 12. Now, about these two men, do we know anything about these men? Do we know their names? No, the Bible doesn't mention their names. Just from your knowledge of the Bible, can you tell me one thing about them? They were men, they were spies, okay? See, you're logging yourself into this one verse and trying to figure it out. How old were they? Approximately. There's not an exact age. You would assume possibly under 30. If they were good old spies, they could have been 39. But more than likely, these are men that were fit, that could blend into the area. They had to be, I mean, they were soldiers, and so therefore they, more than likely, they may have not even been born when the other spies had been sent out. Because remember, the Israelites have been wandering for 40 years. When the 12 spies were sent out, they were sent out to look over the whole land. These two were sent specifically for a purpose. What was that? Spy out Jericho. Military reason. Okay? So we understand these spies. And are spies doing stuff legally? What would happen to spies if they're caught? They're put to death. So we understand this was not necessarily what we understand with legal terms, a legal sanctioned thing. But Joshua did this, sent these men out. And so they went and came to the house of a harlot named Rahab and lodged there. Brings up some commentaries talk about, and when we see this, every time Rahab's name is mentioned, we have the association that the Bible gives us of the harlot. Why did the spies stay there? In olden times, sometimes the harlot, the homes that they had were like brothels. They served as both an inn or a hotel, as well as business. There's the logic that some commentators say, well, the spies went there because that may be the best place to get information. We don't know the exact reasons, but they came to this woman's house. And we'll talk about this in just a minute. Another idea here. But they went and stayed there. We find all that out in one verse there. Now verse 2, and it was told the king of Jericho, saying, behold, men have come here tonight from the children of Israel to search out the country. How good was this king's intelligence? Very good. Where were the Israelites at this time? Not the spies. Where were the Israelites? They were camped over on the east side of Jordan still. They had not crossed the Jordan River. But during the previous years, what had the Israelites been doing on the east side of the Jordan River? They've been conquering the land. That's when Moses was still alive. They were conquering all that land on the east side of the Jordan. So this king knows about and has his own spies out there checking out what the Israelites were doing. And it's possible that his spies had seen these spies coming into the city of Jericho. And whatever his intelligence service, he was pretty up to date. He knew how many there were. He knew where they went. He knew what they were there for. Verse 3, so the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, bring out the men who have come to you, who have entered your house, for they have come to search out all the country. He even knew where they went within the city. And yes, a walled city, as Trina said, it was one of the greatest walled cities in that area at that time. So basically, the only way in and out was through gates. It's not like it was real open. People sneak in easily. So we have this visualization. Then verse 4, then the woman took the two men and hid them. We see in a side note down in verse 6, she brought them up to the roof and hid them there with the stalks of flax which she had laid up on the order of the roof. The roofs there were flat, so they did a lot of things with laying stuff out to dry and so some of the things. So that's what the flax was doing up there. Back to verse 4, she said to them when they came to ask about the two men, yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. And it happened as the gate was being shut when it was dark that the men went out. Where the men went, I do not know. Pursue them quickly, for you may overtake them. Was Rahab truthful? No, she lied. Was it wrong for her to lie? What? No, no, no. Would God want us to sin for Him? No. Okay, so It's always right to do right. It's always wrong to do wrong. Let's make sure we understand that. The fact that she lied, could she have done or said something else where it wouldn't have been a lie and God's accomplishment, I mean, God, what God wanted to be accomplished? Yes. Look at the story of Esther. What was told to Esther when she had to put her life on the line to try to get the king to do something different? I mean, she knew she had to get into his presence without being asked, and if she came, did that, the king could have her put to death. And Mordecai told her,
"You don't know what you were brought to this place.
Yeah, you don't know that you were brought to this time and this place for this reason." And says, "And if you choose not to do it, God will find another way to take care of his plans." Did Abraham have to lie about his wife being his sister?
No.
Was that wrong for Abraham to lie?
Yes,
so lies are wrong. Ruth, you had a... You're right. Rahab was not an Israelite. But were God's laws in existence outside of the kingdom of Israel? God had his laws in existence prior to Israel starting, so there were rules and laws that were considered right and wrong. Yes, she lived in a pagan society, an idol-worshipping society. Yes, and her concept and the way she lived, lying probably was natural.
It is today, too.
Yeah, as Trina says, it is today. Lying is natural. It's a sad situation. Yes, it's a sin when she knew where they were. Absolutely. But how she could have worded it, I'm not even going to try to guess that direction. All I want is for us to understand she wasn't praised for her faith for her sin. Okay? She was praised for the works and the actions she did to first hide them and to secretly tell them how to get away and to make sure they weren't caught after that fact. There's where she showed her faith by her works. But I just wanted to bring up this because it gets brought up a lot of times with her lying, her being a model of faith, but she lied. I just wanted to get that out of the way here. To know that, yes, she lied. Lying is wrong. Could she have done something else? We don't know exactly, but I think God would have taken care of things. Verse 7, the men believed her, the soldiers that were looking for the spies. They pursued them by the road to the Jordan, to the fords, and as soon as they were pursued, them had gone out, they shut the gate. These guys going after the two spies. Jericho is to the west of the Jordan River. So these guys thinking the spies were going back over where Israel was. See, they knew where Israel was. They were on the other side of the Jordan. So they went to Jordan and went to all the fords, kind of blocking off any spot where these spies could get across. And they thought, that's where we're going to find them, if we're going to catch up with them. And that's important to understand the logistics of where everything's taking place because of what else is done. And they shut the gate, which meant no one's going in or out. Now, Rahab in verse 8 and 9 said to the men, "I know that the Lord has given you the land, that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land are faint-hearted because of you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were on the other side of the Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed." There seems to be a great information. I mean, we think today the information, the internet and so forth, well, these people had pretty well knowledge of what was taking place around them. They got news pretty up to date. Rahab in her position, and it says the people, we. It wasn't just her, we have heard. It's talked about. Verse 11, "And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts melted. Neither did there remain any more courage in anyone because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and on earth beneath." This is Rahab. What's her nationality? She's a Canaanite. She believe in God? Was she raised in a godly home to teach her to believe in the God above? No. Has she seen the miracles? Compare her faith to those of the Israelites themselves, who have been in the very presence of God, who had seen His miracles, and constantly murmured and went against Him. And here's a woman who believes in God and has not seen a single miracle. She wasn't taught about God in the home. But her faith in these words here, the Lord your God, He is God in heaven above and on earth beneath. That's a confession that seems to come off that this woman truly believed this. It wasn't just words to try to convince the spies. This woman had faith in something she had not seen. The very essence and the very definition of faith. And from somebody who wasn't raised in the church. As we look at today, does it mean that there are some godly people out there in this world that just have not been taught that some of the things they may need to influence and enhance the rest of their life? Yes. But unless they are taught, how are they going to learn? Cornelius in the New Testament. He desired to know more. He was a Gentile. How did he get to know more? How did he get to learn how to be saved? Peter came to him. Why did Peter go to him? God sent him. It's a two-word definition here. We look at divine providence. Do you believe with all your heart in divine providence? That God can influence people, things, to direct His way. We see it. Don't think of divine providence necessarily as a miraculous situation, because then we start to think, okay, that really can't happen that way. No, that's the influences, because each of us have choices. Can a choice be placed in front of us? If one of them's right, one of them's going to take us one direction, one's going to take us another. Yeah, that happens to us every day, every minute of our lives, of our choices. Do I speak up and talk to this person I've just come in contact with, or just keep my mouth shut? Choices. And that's another reason we look at back there, why did Joshua send these two spies out? Possibly for divine providence of Rahab. God could see that there was a godly woman in this perverted city. And it's God's nature not to destroy the good with the bad. We saw what He had done in Sodom and Gomorrah in saving the few. We saw that He saved Noah and the few. God saw an opportunity to fulfill something for this godly woman. It's not the kind of thing we think about today. There's a godly woman out there that's not raised in the church. We need to open our mind out, because God saw one. And He gave us this example for us to understand today how we are to interact and how we are to be viewing people in the world. Oh, they never go to church. Oh, well, then they can't be too godly. Rahab didn't go to church. She didn't offer sacrifices to God in the way that the Israelites had been told to. She worshipped an idol. But in this instance, we start to see where her mindset is at this point. Verse 12, "Now therefore, I beg you, swear to me by the Lord, since I have shown you kindness, that you also will show kindness to my father's house and give me a true token. Spare my father, my mother, my brothers, my sisters, and all that I have, and deliver our lives from death." So the men answer. So she's asking for her life and the lives of all her loved ones. We're not told any more about her loved ones. We find that the fact that from the brief incident here, Rahab possibly is either a widow or single, because she doesn't mention her husband. She doesn't mention her children. But it says, all that I have, all that they have, so forth. So it's extended family here. In verse 14, so the men answered her, our lives for yours, if none of you tell this business of ours. And it shall be, when the Lord has given us the land, that we will deal kindly and truly with you. These two men, what kind of authority did they have? What kind of authority had Joshua given? Because they're basically agents of Joshua. Joshua sent them out secretly. Could be he didn't even tell any of the rest of his soldiers that he was doing this. He had two chosen men that he trusted and sent them out. These had to be very good men for Joshua to trust them. Remember, wouldn't you think Joshua and Caleb would have very high standards of who they'd want to send out as spies? They'd been there with 10 other men who were not godly and did not have the strong faith. Joshua would have picked out two men like him and Caleb. Now, these men, from the things they're saying here, evidently had some authority. And it's interesting, what was God's command for the people of Canaan that he wanted the Israelites? How were they to interact with the people of Canaan? Utterly destroy them. Is this a conflict here? That some are going to be saved? No, it fits in with God. God's not lying. God had a plan. God's reason, his justification, not justification, but his reason for having that command is good, and it was the right reason. Could there be individuals who were godly that would change from their bad ways of idol worshiping to worshiping the true God? Yes. Why do we know that? Because God gave laws to them on Mount Sinai of how to relate to those who were not Israelites. That were related to, or those who came from without, and how they were to be treated. So we find the situation, these spies, our lives for yours, okay? So they live, you get to live. And that's only, what was the stipulation on that? They can't say anything. Not just her, but none of them can say anything about their business. Then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was on the city wall. She dwelt on the wall. Can you imagine? Can you describe this in your head? Can you visualize it? This is a walled city, and they actually had houses on the inside flush up against the wall to the point that she had a window. What can you tell me about that window? It was on the wall. It had to be high above the ground. Nobody's going to build a thick wall and put a window at ground level. Well, let's let the other soldiers just crawl in the windows on the wall. It had to be very fairly high up. So Rahab's house itself may have been multiple stories, her home. So she let them out the wall. Why did they have to go out that way? The gates had been closed, and they were on the lookout for any potential spies. So she lets them out, lowers them down by the rope. Verse 16, and she said to them, get to the mountain. That's interesting. What kind of topographical area are they in? They're in mountainous area. This section of, you look at a geographical map, and you look at the map in the back of your Bible, you can see this whole section is mountainous range. It's not a flat city. I mean, flat land, we're Florida Indians. Everything's flat here. I mean, it's not like, okay, there's this big walled city that's just right. I can see it 5 miles from here because it's there. No, it's mountainous areas. So she says, go to the mountains, which to them was a description of going a direction different than the ones that she had sent the soldiers that were looking for the spies. Because remember, did the spies hear her tell the soldiers where to look? No, the spies were hidden up on the roof underneath the flax. So the spies didn't hear what she said. Now she's telling them, so that they're having faith in her. They don't know what she told, and because the scripture doesn't tell us that anyway. They may not have known what she told these other soldiers looking for her, but they trusted her. And she says, go to the mountains, lest the pursuers meet you. In other words, if they had left then and started heading towards the Jordan, who would they have possibly met? The pursuers coming back. So she told them to go to the mountains, hide there 3 days. Those guys that went looking for the spies will have gone all the way over there, not seen the spies. They wait around a little bit, and they'll assume that the spies had already gotten across the river, and they would come back. By the time then they come back, the road would be free. Any place they could cross the Jordan would not be guarded. They'd be able to get back across, back to Joshua. Rahab's no dummy. She had a plan. She saw something that would work. She's a smart woman. It says, until the pursuers have returned, hide there 3 days until they have returned. Afterward, you may go your way. So the men said to her, we will be blameless of this oath of yours, which you have made us swear. What was the oath that she made them swear? Her family would be safe. Okay, we're going to be blameless of this unless when we come into the land, you bind this line of scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down. And unless you bring your father, your mother, your brothers, and all your father's household to your own home, so it shall be that whoever goes outside the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his head, and we will be guiltless. And whoever is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head if a hand is laid on him. And if you tell this business of ours, then we will be free from your oath, which you made us swear. What were the three stipulations now? They couldn't tell anybody. They had to be in her house. And the scarlet cord had to be out. So for Rahab and her family to be saved, she had faith. She had to have works too, didn't she? James 2:25 comments and mentions Rahab was justified by her faith, by her works. Hebrews 11 tells us she was faithful. James tells us she was faithful by her works. And we see the example in the scripture of what she had to do. There was stipulations. Is there necessity for our works, for works from us to be saved? We need to obey God. And our works are to believe, repent, confess, be baptized, live faithfully. Those are our works. The Great Commission. Go into all the world, preaching the gospel, baptizing them. We get stopped there a lot of times. Read the next verse. Teaching them. Once they're baptized, they got to be taught. Teaching them to observe all things I have commanded of you. One of the subjects I'm teaching with the young adults this quarter is this teaching thing. Understand, I got them to comprehend and understand teaching. When do we become teachers? The minute we're born, because we start teaching our parents how to be parents. And from every minute on there, we are teaching by our examples. We should be teaching. I mean, Josh Blackmer had the closest concept when he said when he had a little brother, he had someone he had to start teaching. True, we understand that we teach. In all aspects, in every day of our lives, we teach. But we want to fulfill Jesus' great commission. Teach others to observe all things. And we're the living embodiment of Christ, of God. We want people to see them through us as we teach. So the works of Rahab, what did she have to do and so forth. And in verse 21, she said, then she said, according to your words, so be it. So now we have an oral contract. Nothing in writing. We have one side say is they will do this, this, and this. And the other side says they will do this. We agreed. Wouldn't it be great if our society allowed us to do that today and we trusted each other? These were the good old days. The spies departed, okay, and then she sent them away, and they departed, and she bound the scarlet cord in the window. She knew the spies were going to be gone out there 3 days. Did she wait 3 days before she put that scarlet cord on the window? No. She didn't hesitate. She didn't wait. You think about that. She put it out there as soon as they were gone. She hung it out there. Did she know when Israel was going to come and conquer Jericho? No. She had no idea of when that occurrence would occur. How long do you think it took her to get all her family in her house? Not long. Think of her. This is a woman who, by faith, who's never seen a miracle of God, is motivated to do things out of her ordinary way of living, and she didn't hesitate, and she didn't put it off till tomorrow. I'll think about being saved tomorrow. She acted immediately. Just going through some of this, I like to get the feel of a person in the Bible. I mean, we can read through these words, but if you don't think about it and see these things as individuals, as humans, as examples, we can't relate. I create these, when I read these things, I create the visual imagery. I can't visualize a face of Rahab or necessarily what she was wearing, but what she thought, how she thought, based upon actions, by the facts that we're given. We can come up with understanding of this. They departed and went to the mountain. The spies didn't stay there 3 days until the pursuers returned. They followed Rahab's advice, exactly, to the letter. The pursuers sought them all along the way, but did not find them. So the two men returned, descended from the mountain, and crossed over. And they came to Joshua the son of Nun and told him all that had befallen them. And they said to Joshua, truly the Lord has delivered all the land into our hands, for indeed all the inhabitants of the country are faint-hearted because of us. So we see spies came back, told them exactly what Rahab had told them, told them everything, told them their agreement with Rahab. It doesn't mention that there, but we know that they told them that because when Joshua, before they go to take the city of Jericho, he specifically tells his army, see, I'm trying to find the exact place where that was here. Forgot to look that one up. But he specifically told his army about Rahab and the household she was in and how no one was to touch her or anybody within that household. And when she got to that point, he told, they did the 7 days, the walls of Jericho came down except for her home. I mean, we visualize it. Most of the pictures show all the walls going down, but we know one section of the wall stayed up. Now, that's one idea. Some say that the spies went in prior and brought everybody out of that household beforehand. In chapter 6, verse 22, Joshua said to the two men who had spied out the country, go into the harlot's house, and from there bring out the woman and all that she has, as you swore to her. Now you look at descriptions going backwards right before it is right after they've destroyed everybody in the city. So it leads you to believe that household was still standing.
Verse 23 tells us that the men were young men.
Yes, and the young men. But they're young, they could have been younger than Joshua, who was at least 60. But correlation usually, and that's what I thought too. I mean, these are two spies, hardy men that can handle living in the mountains for 3 days and that kind of situation, living on their own ingenuity. They were young men, which goes back to the concept of they weren't around when the 12 spies were sent out. Or even if they had been, they could have been so young they don't remember. And the young men who had been spies went in and brought out Rahab, her father, her mother, her brothers, and all that she had. So they brought out all her relatives and left them outside the camp of Israel. Verse 25, and Joshua spared Rahab the harlot, her father's household, and all that she had. So she dwells in Israel to this day because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. Almost the same kind of wording that goes back to Hebrews 11 that says, by faith she hid the spies. Picture yourself as Rahab now and her whole family in her house. And watching, she has a ringside seat. She can look out that window, right? And watch this Israelite army march around the city. Every day for 7 days. For 6 days up until that seventh day. She's watching this occur. Do you think she's nervous? You think she questions herself? Did she make the right decision? I mean, think of yourselves. What would it be like with you as a human, which is while she was? What would it be like? Yeah, it's our nature to second guess ourselves, is it not? Did I make the right decision? Oh, could I have done something different? Are they really going to save me? I mean, those things can race through our heads all the time. She evidently didn't act on it. If she had the strongest of doubts, was the simplest thing she could have done. Pull that cord back in. Now, I don't believe this is the way it's going to happen. But if she had done something that little and simple, if pulling the cord back in, what would have her outcome been? She would have been destroyed with everybody else. So now we're examining the deep, abiding faith that Rahab had. Is that the same faith we have? Sometimes. I mean, our life isn't on the line all the time like Rahab's was in this situation. Our physical life isn't, but do we need to understand our spiritual life is on the line if we don't have this kind of faith? And she is the first of all the ones mentioned previous. She is the first who's the embodiment of someone like us. By the concept of saying, someone who has not seen the miracles of God. All the others prior to her had been there and been a part of these miracles, had seen it. Some of them had spoken to God. Rahab only heard about this God through how many different levels of different persons telling a story. I mean, you know what happens when someone tells a story to another one tells a story and so forth, how it can be watered down or changed so much. That may have been how she got the stories of this thing, but she believed. She believed enough to put faith in the salvation of her entire household and her family, to act upon that faith and to do that which she knew was the right thing to do. That's why I think this one verse in Hebrews 11 and this one person stands out so much for us to understand and so much for us to relate to her if we truly comprehend and see what takes place, how she was, what kind of person she was, just like us. Now, the importance we talked about before, the concept of divine providence. Turn to Matthew chapter 1. Go down to verse 5. Salmon begot Boaz by Rahab. What is chapter 1 of Matthew? Genealogy of Christ through Joseph. We're given two genealogies of Christ in the New Testament. This one is through Joseph. The one in Luke is through Mary's father. And if you didn't know that, actually the genealogy of Christ goes back through the same sources, and they shoot off at one spot and start going different directions. But Mary and Joseph were both in the genealogy of Christ. We're both all the way back to the same sources, through David, the king. Rahab is mentioned. Only three women other than Mary are mentioned in the genealogy of Christ. Tamar, who had children out of wedlock with Judah. And she had those children by disguising herself as a prostitute. We want to be careful we don't throw stones, because God sure did. And we say God is not a respecter of persons. Why does he continuously mention Rahab the harlot? We better not be respecters of persons, because he wasn't. He saw something in a positive in a person that would be willing to do and follow his commandments. And Rahab did. Rahab assimilated herself after this situation, her and her family, within the Israelites. She followed their laws. She followed the rules. She married, evidently, an Israelite. It had to be, because it's the lineage of Christ. All of those were Jewish. And the third one mentioned is Ruth. What's Ruth's nationality? Moabite. She's not a Jew. The three women that are mentioned stand out as something special. And it's interesting to see, we know the stories of Ruth and her mother-in-law, Naomi. But do you visualize she had two mother-in-laws? Ruth had two mother-in-laws, Naomi and Rahab. Think the stories that Ruth could have heard from Rahab? Now, I never, until I started studying this again, this teach this class, I never visualized that concept. Because, you know, Ruth's first husband died, who was the son of Naomi. So she kept that relationship with Naomi as a mother-in-law. And then when she married Boaz, Boaz's mother was Rahab. And if she lived long enough, I mean, the situation it goes through, I think it's her grandson or great-grandson, Rahab's great-grandson was David. Divine providence. Here was a woman worthy enough to be in the lineage of Christ. God saw something special in her. And did he do things in such a way that she had the opportunity? Was she forced to hide the spies? No, she chose to. God gives us the ability to choose. She chose to show her faith by works. And therefore, she needs to be, and I'm glad she's included in Hebrews 11 here, because it helps me to strengthen my faith and to work harder at being held up as somebody like that. Any questions? Lot's wife had the opportunity to be saved, but she chose to disobey at a point in time, and she was punished for it. She lost her life. She was in the opportunity of being, she was in the process of being saved, but she faltered. Just like I said, if Rahab had pulled the cord out, she wouldn't have been saved. Thank you very much for the class.